afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for spending your lunch hour with us. So, so I think my talk is really taking a snapshot of the folks that Willie talked about, but looking at those parents that have children with developmental disabilities and looking at how they are doing with regard to health and well-being. So I have nothing to disclose. So I, for those of you that know me or don't know me, I started this journey into the disability community as a rehab engineer in West Virginia, and I also had the privilege of being a LEN fellow, or Leadership Education Neurodevelopmental Disability Fellow, at the Children's Hospital of Boston. And this, I think, was a really beautiful story that was first introduced in our LEN curriculum, where we have always had a family faculty and part of that interdisciplinary team. So I just wanted to share with you, it's Welcome to Holland by Emily Pearl Kingsley. She's a writer on Sesame Street. Where you're going to have a baby, it's like planning for a fabulous vacation trip to Italy. You buy a bunch of guidebooks and make you your beautiful plans. The Colosseum, the Michelangelo David, the gondolas in Venice, and you may learn some handy phrases in Italian. It's all very exciting. But after a month of eager anticipation, the day finally arrives. You pack your bags and off you go. Several hours later, the plane lands, and the steward comes in and says, "Welcome to Holland." And it sort of describes that, you know, the birth of a child and with developmental disabilities, and then now the parents are inundated with information, and they're asked to navigate systems, programs, and connected with a dozen or more providers, and we throw our parents into this system, complicated system, and we just expect them to thrive. And we've seen some incredible family champions come out of the process, but I didn't want us to lose sight of some of the impact on health of those parents as they're navigating through our very, very complex system. So what's some of the background? So we know either anecdotally or from previous studies that parents with children with developmental disabilities have poor physical health, have worse mental health outcomes, report higher levels of stress, and report depression. And some of these stressors may come from out-of-pocket expenses or recurring hospitalization or emergency department visits, limited access to medical care, being able to access special education service and the level of advocacy that it requires to work along with the educational agencies to get everything that they need through their individualized education plans for their child. Again, navigating publicly funded programs and benefits, we really don't make it easy for the parents out there when we try to develop programs. And then this other piece of transition to adulthood is another parental stressor. It's been described to me as they're falling off a cliff from being supported in a special education environment into an adult system that really has no safety net. Another sort of reason for me to launch into the study was Dr. Colleen Boyle, the center director at the National Center on Birth Defects and Developmental Disability. She's the lead author for this paper called Trends and Prevalence of Developmental Disabilities in U.S. Children. And she noted a 17% increase in children with developmental disabilities from the 1997 to 1999 period compared to 2006 and 2008. At that time, I was in Maternal and Child Health Bureau, and I was thinking, oh my gosh, what I need to figure out what's going on with the parents at the same time and see what exactly was happening in terms of their health status, given this incredible increase in prevalence of developmental disabilities. So I sort of launched into the study as part of an independent study project that I was doing at the University of Maryland, one, to really understand what the parent health status is during the same period and describe the population of parents and children with developmental disabilities and versus those that are typically developing, and then really look at the association between having a child with developmental disability and self-reported parental health and well-being. And I am an engineer by training, and so I also wanted to look at, are there solutions or interventions that we could take a look at to see how we can better support the parents if it comes out that they're still, you know, having significant health and well-being challenges. So I wanted to explore the relationship between neighborhood attributes and parental health and well-being, as well as look at the association between neighborhood support and parental health and well-being. So very fortunately, the Maternal and Child Health Bureau at the Health Resources and Services Administration funded the National Survey of Children's Health, and they had a 2007 NSCH administered at that time. So I thought it would really be appropriate, given the time frame of Colleen's study and an NSCH, to look at parental health and well-being. So this the sample size was 91,000, a little over 91,000 kids. The data collection period is between April 2007 and July of 2008, and the interview completion rate was about 66%. There were sampling weights that allow us to generalize to the non-institutionalized population of children in each state and nationwide. Specifically, the variables that I looked at, the first objective, I looked at the exposure variables of having a child with developmental disability, and the second exposure variable that I took a look at was the neighborhood support variable. And then the outcome that I looked at is parental health and well-being. The covariates within my model are child's age, family poverty level, child's sex, family structure, race, ethnicity, and insurance coverage. The statistical methods that I used include bivariate analyses, chi-square statistics, and the multivariate logistic regression. And then all of the analysis was completed in SAS 9.3. So in terms of looking at the social demographics, you'll see that the sample is comprised predominantly of children from non-Hispanic white families. There is, within the Hispanic family, 13.6% that has developmental disabilities, and then 21% typically developing. With respect to the non-Hispanic black, 16.3% had reported developmental disabilities, and 15% typically developing. And then the non-Hispanic, multi-race, and other, those include like Asian Americans, American Indian, Native American populations in that category. In terms of the gender distribution, we see within the children with developmental disability, there's 71% that were boys. And so I think this is reflective of, you know, looking at some of our disability prevalences with respect to gender on that, whereas the typical developing, you have more of a 50-50 split among those kids. In terms of the multivariate analysis of the parental health and well-being, you'll see across the board that the parents of children with developmental disabilities are reporting lower adjusted odds of having very good or excellent maternal health. The fathers are also reporting poor health as well. And then with regards to coping with daily demands of parenthood very well, they're also reporting lower odds as well. And then finally, sort of experiencing anger and agitation, no anger or agitation with child in the past, they're also at lower odds as well. So I think it really calls to attention that the parents are expressing that they're not doing very well with regard to health, and there's a level of aggravation that they're feeling as a result of dealing with all the different challenges that they have day to day. So in looking at neighborhood attributes, in the National Survey of Children's Health, there were questions regarding whether they resided in supportive neighborhoods, and then neighborhoods of sidewalks, neighborhoods of parks and playground, neighborhoods of recreation center, neighborhoods that have libraries. And so really the folks that there were significant differences between those that resided in supportive neighborhoods and those that didn't reside in, between developmental disabilities and typically developing, the parents were reporting more in the typical developing in the residing of supportive neighborhoods. So I wondered, would that make a difference? So I looked at just at the parents or the kids with developmental disabilities to see, well, how did neighborhood support then come into play in terms of their health and well-being? So with regards to maternal health, if a mom lived in a supportive neighborhood, they had two times the odds of reporting very good or excellent health. Similarly for the fathers, if they live in a supportive neighborhood, that they were two times more likely to report excellent or very good health. And I think the other piece was they also was that, you know, 1.6 times more likely to experience no anger or agitation with the child in the past month. So it sort of suggests to me that there is significant disparities that are self-report health of mothers and fathers of children with developmental disabilities as compared to parents with children with typically developing children. And then with regards to parents experiencing anger and agitation from interaction with their child, we see that our parents of children with developmental disability are at a risk as well. So what is the role of neighborhood support? The analysis seems to tell us that neighborhood support is associated with improved maternal and paternal health, but there's sort of no differences in access to some of the neighborhood attributes that we took a look at that would be sort of conclusive to looking at promoting physical activities among parents of children with developmental disabilities. So if perhaps the findings highlight a need for intervention strategies for parents and with children with developmental disabilities to look at interventions at the family and the neighborhood level. Strength and limitations. So the strength is the generalizability, the national representative sample contained within the National Survey of Children's Health. It's a really large sample size. It's also parental self-report of health and well-being. The limitation is sort of the lack of biomarker or clinical data in contextualizing health conditions and status. So no cortisol levels or elevated prolactin, those kind of biomarker data that could tell us about stress levels. And then it's a cross-sectional survey design, so we can't infer any causality. And then there's a potential selection bias in respondent participation in a telephone survey. In terms of policies and next steps, I think, we know that those parents with children with developmental disabilities are at risk. I've alluded to the fact that sort of at the sort of micro systems policy level, we could potentially target the enhancement of neighborhood supports or how to provide technical assistance to our family support programs to help our families in terms of collaborating with community-based organizations to build that support. But one question I did want to pose to the audience and sort of leave you all with is that how can we help design a more user-friendly system of care moving forward if our current system is so complex and so challenging to navigate for our parents?